Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Amazon's announcement in June that it plans to buy upscale grocery Whole Foods for nearly $14 billion made headlines across the country and, I suspect, around the world. Some predicted a more competitive, consumer-friendly market. Others warned that Amazon is getting too big. We're talking about those predictions today. We'll start with the announcement itself and what we know. Joining us is Ohio State Fisher College of Business Marketing Professor Shashi Mehta. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Columbus Dispatch Food and Agriculture reporter J.D. Malone. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
The reaction right off the bat was sort of a bit of shock, J.D., and also, boom, the next day, Kroger stocks dropped 9% in value.
Right.
What did you make? I mean, a lot of people thought Kroger was going to buy Whole Foods. That was the rumor for the past year.
And I think that that's why it was so shocking to everyone, because the rumor from about 6 months before, say, the October November range was that Kroger was taking a look. They were kind of sniffing around Whole Foods, figuring out whether they were going to acquire them or not. Kroger has done a ton of M&A, merger and acquisitions the past couple of years, so it would not have been surprising to have Kroger taking a look.
It was sort of like the federated department stores of the grocery business, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Buying very familiar brands in different regions of the country, Fred Meyer up the Northwest, different.
They bought Harris Teeter.
They bought
a couple in the Milwaukee area recently. But it never necessarily made sense for Kroger to go after Whole Food, because Whole Food was a little bit of a fixer-up at this time. Sales have stagnated. They haven't had that sort of explosive growth that they had for a long time. And that's mostly because people like Kroger had really shifted their business strategy to kind of cut off Whole Foods growth, and it worked. And Kroger doesn't buy fixer-uppers. They buy businesses that they can bolt on to their current business, where they can expand in areas that they don't currently dominate. Companies that have things that they need. They bought Harris Teeter to get ClickList, which is their online purchasing system. And Harris Teeter added a whole new market and kind of an upscale, smaller format for them to use in other places. And so that's probably why Kroger didn't grab Whole Foods last year.
Shashi Mehta, why Whole Foods a fixer-upper? You were nodding there. It's what's gone wrong with Whole Foods in the last few years? Because it was doing pretty well up until about, 2014, 2015, and then it started a decline.
Yes, absolutely. I think if you look at popular consumer perception, people called it the whole paycheck. They were known to not being very efficient. They were known for high prices. And in the organic produce and natural food segment, there started a big movement where there were other stores that were coming up, local competition. They competed with farmers markets. They competed with new stores like, for example, in Columbus, you have Lucky's Market. Mm-hmm. You have
The Fresh Thyme.
And then I think most of its squeeze came from retailers like Kroger. They expanded their local and organic produce sections and competed very, very vigorously with Whole Foods. So Kroger was one of the reasons why Whole Foods right now is a fixer-upper.
Can we talk a little bit about the Columbus market right now, that most of our listeners are familiar with the Central Ohio market when it comes to grocery stores? How does it stack up, J.D. Malone? Is this a typical market?
I wouldn't say that it's necessarily typical. Columbus is incredibly competitive from a supermarket standpoint. If you take a look at Cincinnati, Cincinnati is almost all Kroger. It is Kroger, Kroger, Kroger. Granted, okay, it's their home market, but it's completely dominated by Kroger. If you take a look at Cleveland, Cleveland's very much a Giant Eagle market. Giant Eagle is sort of the dominant carrier there. In Columbus, Kroger is the dominant supermarket, but Giant Eagle has a huge presence here. Walmart has a big presence here. Meijer has a big presence here. Whole Foods has three stores. There's the Lucky's. I'm sure I'm missing a bunch. There's
Trader Joe's.
There's Aldi. There is just a cornucopia of supermarket selection here in Central Ohio. And typically what my analysts tell me is that this is – it's a fantastic market.
For
supermarkets.
But for is it for the consumer or the
– For the consumer because we have enormous choice.
Okay.
And they're and the supermarkets are fighting here tooth and nail.
Is it – why? Why is Columbus like that, Shashi?
I think Columbus has the reputation of being one of the biggest retail meccas in the United States.
In general.
In general. For example, when you think of fast food restaurants, we've been America's test market for over three decades.
Dubious distinction, but yeah.
Yes. When you think of other retail apparel, for example, we are a retail mecca, and I think this kind of competition in the grocery store format is primarily, I think, because we don't have any of these large retailers, grocery store retailers, that are headquartered here, but headquartered close enough to be very strong players.
Giant Eagle, Giant Cleveland, Eagle, Kroger, Cincinnati, Meijer, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And Columbus, compared to all other cities in Ohio, I think, has a larger proportion of consumers who want variety of all kinds, including natural foods, organic produce, all kinds of
Now that you mention it, I probably shop at probably three to four different grocery stores on a pretty regular basis. But for one thing, I have the choice to.
Right.
So
that's an interesting concept that a lot of grocery stores actually fight for what is called share of wallet. So let's take you, for example. You probably would shop at three to four grocery stores. Could be Kroger, Whole Foods, Walmart, Trader Joe's, right? Now, each of these stores, say you spend $1,000 on groceries every month. Let's assume that. That's how much your family spends on groceries every month. Now, each of these players, each of these stores know that you're not exclusive to their store. They know that. So what they're trying to do is when you go to that store, they're trying to get as much of that $1,000 check from you as possible. So that's why Kroger does things like fuel perks. That's why Walmart has opened up organic sections of its produce, because it knows that people are going to other stores for that particular selection. But each one of these players is trying to fight for share of wallet, your share of wallet.
And that is a really interesting segue and back into the Amazon question, because how do they know? And that is what matters, I suppose, in the bottom line to Amazon more than anything is access to information. J.D. Malone?
Yeah, I think they absolutely want Whole Foods information. The data is one of the reasons why they're paying a 40-something percent premium on Whole Foods, a price that players like Kroger wouldn't pay.
Okay.
And part of it is Amazon wants to know that Whole Foods customer. They want to know what they're buying, where they live, their zip codes. They want all of that stuff. They want to know that, hey, these guys who live in Powell, zip code, they buy this XYZ organic produce from the Whole Foods store in Dublin. Or maybe they go down to Grandview to get whatever is in that Whole Foods store. They want to know. And part of that is because Amazon can then feed all that stuff into their own system so that when you pull up the Amazon app on your phone, it's going to give you all kinds of selection.
I was interested to read that it could become as granular as, if you allow it, if you're walking down and you spend a lot of time in the ethnic foods aisle of the store, maybe they can tell if it's even right in front of the Mexican food or the Indian food or whatever it might be, they can then send you coupons, they can send you specials by way of Amazon.
So one thing that Amazon, I agree with JD on this, that one thing that Amazon does not have access to right now is how people shop in stores, in brick and mortar stores. For example, they introduced about seven Amazon bookstores, brick-and-mortar bookstores. They have seven locations all across the country. And they organized those bookstores the way people browse online. Huh. And what they discovered was that it was a total failure, that actual readers who go to brick-and-mortar stores shop and browse in very different patterns. They do not have access to that data. And that data is what Whole Foods can give them. Now, going back to what you just said about facial recognition and where you are in the store, a recent French grocery store experiment goes like this. Shoppers go into stores, spend time looking at different products in the aisles. There is facial recognition technology now that actually reads consumers' emotions. So if they seem distressed or confused, then a store associate is dispatched right away to go help them figure out what's bothering them.
It might be their kids.
Probably. But we have data now that shows that very well-educated store staff, particularly in stores like Whole Foods, can help close the sale and enhance that shopping basket value overall. Now, Amazon does not have any of these capabilities right now.
You talked about efficiencies and how they need to wring some efficiencies into or out of or inefficiencies out of the Whole Foods
right.
business plan. Whole Foods is known for its well-educated store staff. Human resources are always the most expensive part of it. Should people at Whole Foods be worried that they're going to cut wages, they're going to cut jobs and that kind of a thing?
It's a really good question. And we just don't know at this point.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think Amazon could bring to the deal is scale. Whole Foods does not have scale. People think of Whole Foods as a really big company.
450 stores,
but it's
though.
Only about 400 stores.
Okay.
I mean, Kroger's got over 2,000
yeah.
stores, and they have national kind of reach. Amazon may bring some sort of scale to the ability to purchase items. And then Whole Foods actually will also bring infrastructure for Amazon's fresh offerings that they're trying to do through their Prime Now service, which is also local.
And fresh offerings meaning produce.
Yes.
All right. That's a big thing. That's what I can't even imagine buying online is produce. I don't want some 17-year-old at a grocery store picking out my green beans for me.
That's true. Most consumers are like you, Anne. But if you look at what has happened in the last couple of years and in the last few months with Kroger's click list, where you can order products and pick them up at the store, there's a store associate who rushes outside with the deliveries and stocks them and puts them in your car, comes with an iPad-like device and rings you out. You can use your coupons. You can use your loyalty points, everything.
You never need to leave the car.
No. And that whole business, not just Kroger's, but in the industry right now, is valued at $20 billion a year, either deliveries or pickup at the store for grocery items, which include produce, by the way. So we don't know how that will evolve. There are bets on that it will become a $100 billion business in the next 4 to 5 years.
If it's $20 billion now, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think, well, you never thought that you could sit at home and order a television or order, you know, Amazon started off as a bookstore, right? And look what they've trained us to do. They've trained us really nicely to consume with Prime and order just about everything. So I do know that for produce, particularly for local produce, organic produce, going in the store is still very important. But we don't know what the future of that engagement will look like and that sale will look like going forward.
J.D. Malone, before I let you go, what about other – we mentioned all the variety of grocery stores in Central Ohio. Are some more threatened by this than others? I mean, Kroger's the giant. It's going to take a hit, but it probably is going to be able to withstand that hit easier than, say, a Fresh Time, these smaller operations?
That's a really good question, Anne. One of the things that some of the analysts and I had kind of been batting around was that there are a couple companies that you never bet against. One of them is Amazon. One of them is Kroger.
Right.
People 20 years ago thought Walmart was going to put Kroger out of business, and Kroger really turned the tables on them. People thought Whole Foods was going to really hurt Kroger. Kroger turned the tables on them too. Now it's smaller players, guys like Giant Eagle, that maybe don't have the size or scale or money that Kroger has. They may find competition a little bit stiffer. And people don't really know exactly what's going to shake out with operations like Fresh Thyme, Earth Fare, you know, these sort of kind of smaller upscale grocers. People tend to really like them, but no one's exactly really sure how this is going to play into that. And then there's guys like Aldi and the new upstart Lidl, who's coming in
from Germany,
who are
right.
really probably going to change things because they are dumping a ton of money into the U.S. to expand, to get people to start shopping their stores. Those are the guys who are probably going to start eating away at the Giant Eagles and kind of those smaller regional chains, maybe even the Myers of the world.
So it's coming in from all sides.
Right.
J.D. Malone, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
J.D. Malone, food and agriculture reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. More coming up about the grocery store wars and what they look like in Central Ohio and across the country. Now that Amazon has said that it plans to purchase Whole Foods for $13.7 billion. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Amazon has announced plans to purchase upscale grocer Whole Foods for $13.7 billion. Analysts say that this could be the first step in completely changing how we shop. And although some have predicted that consumers will see lower prices and a more healthy competition among grocers, others have predicted that if Amazon gets too big, it could monopolize the grocery industry. Still with us is Ohio State Fisher College of Business Marketing Professor Shashi Mehta. Thanks again, Shashi, for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
Also joining us now by phone is Supermarket Guru founder Phil Lempert, a grocery and retail industry analyst. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
You've said that this deal is absolutely game-changing for Amazon. How so?
Well, it's not only game-changing for Amazon, but it's for the whole industry. If we go back a couple weeks, it was probably the game-changing week for supermarkets. We've never seen anything like it. We started out the week with Lidl opening up in a very different format than they have in Europe. It was followed then by Aldi saying that they're going to invest another $5.6 billion, and they had another 600 stores. Then it was followed by that Texas Monthly profile that was not very flattering of John Mackey. Then
John Mackey, who is?
CEO of Whole Foods.
Whole Foods, gotcha.
And then what we found is Kroger stock down 18%, Costco down 10%, and we ended the week on Friday with Amazon saying, hey, we're going to take over Whole Foods. So you take all that stuff together, and basically every CEO of every retailer is shaking in their boots.
Just because they don't know what's coming next.
Well, I think they do know what's coming, and that's why they're afraid. They know that Amazon is a very efficient, very smart operation, so we're probably going to see Whole Foods prices drop very quickly when Amazon gets involved. So they remove that whole paycheck feeling that consumers around the country have. We know that they're now going from 100 distribution points to 561 by adding 461 Whole Foods stores, mm-hmm. which clearly can fuel those Amazon Fresh trucks and expand that. We know that now there's another 461 locations for Amazon lockers, so that what we can do is order online, go into Whole Foods for either lunch or dinner at their grocerant, then do our shopping, then on the way out, collect all that other stuff that we bought on Amazon. So everybody understands that this is really going to change their business. I don't care whether you're a convenience store or whether you're Kroger or whether you're Walmart. This is going to change the dynamic and really get every single retailer out there up to speed and get them to understand that the time is now, that they've got to go to click and collect models, that they've got to have smaller stores, that they've got to have more fresh foods, that they really have to be much more attuned with the consumer.
How much could Amazon change? I mean, could Amazon potentially change Whole Foods?
Yeah, Whole Foods is broken. That's why they're buying it.
What's broke about it?
Well, what's broke is John Mackey and his partners originally were brilliant. What they did is they changed the model away from a dirty, dank health food store with the oldest living person in the community behind the counter who was ready to keel over and sell you wheat germ. They really switched that over to being a supermarket. The problem is that they haven't changed in decades from where they were. And John Mackey, frankly, has been a loose cannon. Walter Robb, his co-CEO, was a great, stable operations guy. And frankly, you know, over a year ago, Mackey forced him out. Whole Foods has been broken for a long time. And even if you look at the comments that John Mackey is making now, that, you know, they took their eye off the consumer and they put it on their employees, not true. You know, a little over a year ago, again, John Mackey, you know, went on YouTube to talk about how his employees in New York screwed up, not the chain, put the whole blame on the employees by overcharging for overweight, freshly prepared foods. This is not a guy who's concerned about his employees, never has been, and frankly, he just wants to do his agenda, which is being vegan and, you know, redoing the healthcare system, and he is not an operational guy, and frankly, he should have been out 10 years ago.
But there's no guarantee that he will be out, all things being equal. There still are regulatory hurdles, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is. But, you know, just knowing the psyche of Amazon and the psyche of John Mackey, you know, I think maybe they use him in a spokesperson role, if at all. But clearly, he's not going to be running this business.
Shashi, you're saying no.
I agree with what most of Mr. Lambert said. However, I do not think they're going to get rid of John Mackey very quickly. In fact, they've stated publicly that they will still have him on as CEO for the foreseeable future. And sure, he has not been the best operational leader and he's had problems. But I think one of the things that Amazon does with its very successful acquisitions, I'm going to point out to two of them to you. One is Zappos. And the other is a gaming streaming company called Twitch, which is extremely successful.
Zappos being the shoe company.
That's known for shoes.
Well, I have no idea why I know that. But there's
that's not how they advertise themselves.
Right.
They tell the world they are a service company who happens to sell shoes and handbags and accessories. And that's true. It's a very successful model. Now, Amazon has not interfered with how the Zappos model works or with how Twitch works. They have leveraged both these in different ways, and I'm happy to discuss that in detail.
Again, it's knowledge.
It's knowledge. It's data. But they have leveraged in some ways with Twitch more recently using Prime as the common platform, Amazon Prime, and giving people access through Prime.
And that's when people pay $99 a year and they get better deals.
They get free shipping, free two-day shipping. Which they're banking on. Amazon has always put a lot of eggs in that basket, in the Prime basket. I agree with what Mr. Lambert is saying, particularly this is a very big deal. They've spent $1.2 billion on Zappos, $1 billion on Twitch, but they've spent $13.7 billion, or they're planning to spend $13.7 billion on Whole Foods. So this is a different league altogether. And I think there will be changes, but I do not want, there's a lot of speculation about how prices will go down and how employees might get cut, fired, how operations will be streamlined. I think it's a little too soon. Amazon likes, although it's a massive company, it likes to do small experiments first. It likes to do experiments, figure out what's going on, get all that knowledge that it does not have about local preferences, about organic and fresh produce. So I do not think those changes will happen really quickly.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Questions, comments, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Mark in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Ann. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
My question deals with how these retailers are addressing the social conscience of their customers. I mean, for example, I won't shop at Walmart simply because of the history the Walton family has behind it and the way they treat their employees. And I shop at Kroger's because it's a union shop and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Is it that personal, Phil Lempert, for everybody?
It is, and I agree with you. However, one thing that's a huge secret, and I've talked to a lot of the Walmart C-suite executives about this any number of times, Walmart is a much better company and a much better corporate citizen than people realize. And for whatever reason, Walmart just doesn't talk about it. They're out there helping farmers, making contracts with farmers who otherwise wouldn't have a living. And frankly, they have their purchasing department training the farmers on how to buy things. They even help give them no-interest loans if they need to buy tractors and so on. So on the Walmart side, I agree with that public persona that people have of Walmart being this horrible company. But the reality is that they're a lot better than that. But if we look at Generation Z and if we look at millennials, it is clear that they want to do business with companies that align in values with them. They want transparency. They want to know absolutely everything that's going on with that company.
And they don't have four kids to feed every week.
Yet.
Yeah. Shashi?
I agree with what Phil said. Going back to the original question, I think there is a lot of evidence to show that millennials and Generation Z will shop at stores and will patronize brands that align with their values. However, I'm a marketing professor, and I know for a fact that we cannot paint the world with these broad brush strokes. It's a segmentation story. Right. It's the best kind of segmentation story. There's, for example, what Phil said about Lidl and Aldi trying to ramp up the competition and the heat for players like Walmart, for players like Kroger at the lower end, at the value end of products. And with companies now like Amazon and Whole Foods, if that merger goes through, if that acquisition goes through, what that will mean, all of these are different segments in the consumer market. So I don't think there's going to be everybody in the market who says, I will only shop at places which align with my values. Mm-hmm. There is a segment, and that segment will continue to patronize those stores. However, there are a lot of consumers today and in the future, too. They will continue to be consumers who don't care about that, who care about value, who care about, I know of consumers who care about organic, but not about the footprint it leaves. As long as it's organic, I'm okay. Well,
no matter how far it traveled to get there.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
Right? So all of these are different segments. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to realize that. There is always companies who will play to those segments that they're strong with.
Yeah, Phil Lempert?
Yeah, Shashi is 100% correct. And also, when we take a look at what's going on in food and beyond food, but, you know, my purview is just the food world, it's all about personalization. And if we go back, you know, again, a couple decades when Martha Rogers and Don Peppers wrote One-to-One Marketing, we didn't have the technology then, but this is a premise that has been around for a long time. And now what we're starting to see with JetFresh, what we're seeing with Peapod, what we're seeing with Amazon is more personalization than ever before. So really think in terms of a supermarket for one. And what Shashi is saying in that consumer profile, absolutely correct. You have people who want organics, don't want GMOs, don't care about price. And then you've got people who want organics, don't care about anything else but price. So this matrix that we're building, that we're allowed to build because of the internet and everything that's going on in delivery and online shopping, is really going to create a unique shopping experience just for me. And Phil's shopping experience is going to be different than Ann's shopping experience.
Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Ed.
Yes. My question is, the QuickList and those other services sound really great right now, mm-hmm. but at 90 degrees with high humidity and the sun beating down, or at 10 degrees with a stiff breeze, who's going to want to sit in their car while this transaction happens in front of the store? How much infrastructure are they going to have to do to put drive-throughs in, and coolers if you want meat and vegetables so that it's still being fresh when it gets there.
Let me explain exactly how it works. The whole click and collect model is a little different. What you do is you go online and you order and you say what time you want to pick it up. Obviously, you've got that window. Your groceries, whether it be frozen, fresh, or dry groceries, are kept inside until you come up. Then, in the case of Amazon Fresh Pickup, they've got technology that identifies your license plate as you're driving up. Other stores like Hy-Vee and ShopRite just wait for you to come in. Then they bring them out instantly to your car. And it's the old, like, 1950s drive-in that has those, ceilings above it. Ceilings is the wrong word. Ann, help me out there. But it's a carport.
Some kind of awning type of thing so the rain doesn't
Thank
hit
you.
You, right.
Thank you. So Ed, don't worry about that. It's really very temperature controlled. I wouldn't worry about it at all. And again, with Amazon's technology to identify you by your license plate as you're driving through, I think that's going to become pervasive for all these click and collect models.
They put a whole new section in the store. They carved out a section in our grocery store to do that.
Yeah, and the people who are picking the groceries are educated. They've got, whether it's an iPad or some other device to go through. It's all temperature controlled. In fact, in my view, the click and collect model is going to put Instacart out of business. A lot of the delivery services like Shipt and so on are really struggling right now. So I think that it's going to be Amazon Fresh for delivery, and I think it's going to be click and collect, and those will be the two winners.
Yeah, because the alternative then is, Shashi, that people would have it delivered to their house. That's the other option, and the packaging involved in that and all of that just seems kind of ridiculous.
It is. It's not a very it's not a business that many people have had success in. It's the last leg. That last mile that has to travel, and people have not been able to crack it as well as and as dominantly as Amazon has done so.
We're talking about the future of the grocery store in the United States with the proposed purchase by Amazon of Whole Foods for $13.7 billion. My guest, you just heard from Shashi Mehta. He's a clinical associate professor of marketing at Ohio State in the Fisher College of Business. Also with us, Phil Lempert, grocery and retail analyst and founder of SupermarketGuru.com. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Amazon made headlines in June after announcing plans to purchase Whole Foods for $13.7 billion. And although some have predicted that consumers will see lower prices and a more healthy competition among grocers, others have predicted that if Amazon gets too big, it could monopolize the grocery industry. Still with us by phone is grocery and retail industry analyst and Supermarket Guru founder Phil Lempert. Also with us, Ohio State Fisher College of Business Marketing professor Shashi Mehta. Phil Lempert, what is your view about how antitrust officials, regulators will view this proposed acquisition?
Well, I think if you look in terms of all of Amazon, this represents less than 3% of their business. So I don't think that this is a very big deal at all. I also don't think that it really, you know, impinges on any activity. If Kroger, if Walmart, other people that had been looking at Whole Foods or Albertsons had done it, I think that there would have been something there. But I think that this is just small potatoes for Amazon. It's really not a sector that they're in now. And I think it just makes a lot of sense. So I don't see any problems going forward with the FTC.
Shashi?
I agree with Phil entirely. I don't think this is going to be frowned upon by any regulatory body. And in fact, like Phil said, Kroger was thinking about doing it. There were rumors that Walmart might make a bid, but both of them have said no, they won't make a bid. And I think this will go through fine.
All right. So that means that this something like this goes through. It will. Amazon is huge. It controls huge, 52% of the book market. 72% or maybe even higher than that of just the online retail market. It's crazy what this could mean. I mean, how might it change Whole Foods?
I think Whole Foods will still be Whole Foods for a little while longer. There will be efficiencies introduced, like Phil opined, and I completely agree with that. But I don't think things are going to change in a hurry. I think Amazon will take some time to learn about how individual consumers shop, what each of these local stores and their local relationships brings to the table for Amazon. And I agree with you, Anne, in the speculation that this might change how grocery shopping is shaped in the future. But I'm going to be cautious about saying we don't know how. We don't know how. It's just not going to be the way I think all of us think. I think that data about consumers, their individual preferences in these cities with produce, their shopping habits in store versus online, all that data that Amazon is afforded could lead to something very, very different in the way we shop, and we don't know that yet.
I would agree, and keep in mind two factors. Number one is 90% of Amazon Prime members are within 10 miles of a Whole Foods store. So that dynamic is really interesting to Amazon, especially when you look at the Amazon Fresh rollout. And I think that the store Whole Foods will not change dramatically. But again, as I said before, I think that they instantly get a whole bunch of Amazon lockers, that Amazon Fresh delivery really rolls out, because what's holding that back is really meat and produce. And with Whole Foods, meat and produce now ramps up to the high quality. So I think those are going to be the two changes that we see, or two evolutions that we see very quickly. But the stores themselves, I agree with Shashi that we're not going to see a lot of changes that quickly.
Richard in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, and thank you for your service. I'm a sustainer, and I encourage other listeners to be.
Thank you.
But to my question, which is kind of a tangent, what do you think of the context in the future of luxury butchers and grocers like Weiland's on Indianola that has such features as an aquarium-sized fish tank in the store,
mm-hmm.
and in season, gigantic smokers in their parking lot? And I'll listen offline.
Can those still survive in this new age of grocery shopping? Phil Lempert?
Yes. Absolutely. Again, think about that personalization, that one-to-one marketing. And we've seen over probably the past 5 years the rise of independent local butcher shops. People want quality. And again, that's being led by the millennial generation, who is very food involved. And they're willing to take that extra step to go to another store, to get quality, to really understand where that meat or where that chicken is coming from. So, yes, I do think that it can survive, and it will will thrive. Whole Foods is, and Amazon is not going to take over the food world. They're not. You have Aldi and Lidl getting that value consumer who really wants value, less concerned about national brands. 90% of what you find in an Aldi or Lidl is under their own brands. So, yes, it's all about segmentation, such as Sashi has said before, and there'll be a bunch of stores. For me, the dinosaur is that typical 40,000-square-foot supermarket that has 45,000 SKUs, 45,000 different products in it. That's the one that's at risk, not that specialty grocer that's doing something like having the barbecue in the parking lot or the fish tank. They're okay. It's that typical store that's extinct.
I agree with Phil entirely, but let me add some nuance to this story. So the question about luxury butchers or these niche players is a very good one, because there was a story on NPR less than a week ago which talked to some of the suppliers, these farmers who supply to Whole Foods directly. And what they were saying was that we actually don't fear that Amazon will take over Whole Foods. And the reason is that we think they're going to make our products get to the consumer more easily through an online platform, which actually was difficult for them to get that break into Whole Foods in the first place. Mm-hmm. So there would be some luxury butchers and some niche players who are successful now and will continue to be successful. I think that there's optimism even with smaller players, farmers who may not get their product as easily to consumers today. I think it's possible that online platforms that Amazon can provide will actually help even those niche players to get their produce to consumers.
What about something that I've read about recently with all of this is that it's not just about how we buy groceries, but it's about how and where those groceries are made and distributed. Amazon owner Jeff Bezos completely changed book selling, right? He controls, there was the whole Hachette controversy when when Hachette wouldn't change the prices of their books. They threatened to, well, they just didn't. You didn't see Hachette being promoted on Amazon anymore. Phil Lempert?
Yeah, I think that Amazon brings a lot to the party. I agree. I've been in the grocery business my entire life. My grandfather was a dairy farmer. My father is a food manufacturer. And I hesitate to say this because I'm going to come under a lot of criticism. Mm-hmm. The grocery industry is not the cool guys. These are not people, who are thinking up what's next, what's exciting. For many years, they've been the guys who have been piling it high, selling it cheap, going from format to format, everyday low prices to high prices and so on. We're finally getting a new generation of intelligence, a new way. And again, Silicon Valley is known for life hacking. Supermarkets need life hacking. They really do. And it's very exciting for me being in this industry to say, okay, now we're going to open up the floodgates. We're going to think about grocery shopping a whole different way. We're going to think about our food supply from farm to fork a whole different way, whether it's what Sashi just said about, farmers being able to get their products to consumers better in a more transparent way, whether it's checking for, imposter products, which is a huge problem.
Well, what are they?
There's companies in China that take a box of Cheerios and it looks just like Cheerios, and they dump it here in the U.S., and you and I as a consumer would never know. Obviously, the cereal companies know. It's been going on for cigarettes for decades, but we're seeing it in food products as well. A lot of products that come on to our shelves that say, USDA organic from a country that we've never heard of, I guarantee they're not having USDA, inspections to verify that it's organic. Mm-hmm. So I think that what we're going to see with Amazon is also a lot of cleaning up of these counterfeit products. I think it's going to be great all across the industry, and consumers are going to win.
You know, I was kind of wondering, Kroger's gotten into the pharmacy business pretty big.
Yep, the little clinic is brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And Amazon, yet again, another something that Amazon could bring to a Whole Foods.
Yes. Again, the prescription business is a very different business.
Okay.
And I think that for Amazon, you know, knowing them, they're probably looking at that business. Express Scripts
just
really
separate, yeah.
from a mail order owns that. So maybe Amazon buys Express Scripts at some point, but I don't think that's, you know, in the short term.
An email from Gemma, she said, I just paid $101 after saving $42 at Kroger with the company's personalized coupons. They come in the mail, offering specials on the food I use most often, plus discounts on gasoline. I'm a loyal Kroger girl, grew up in Cincinnati, but stick with them because of that targeted marketing. Again, they know a lot about their customers. Shashi?
Absolutely. They know so much about the customer. They know, for example, that an average customer, like the customer who wrote you the email, probably shops for toothpaste once every 5 weeks. And if she has not bought her toothpaste in 5 weeks at Kroger, then they're going to target her with coupons because they're worried that she has probably spent that money on toothpaste elsewhere. Mm. It's the whole idea of share of wallet, and these companies are getting much better at getting personal information about you, building profiles, pushing promotions and targeted messaging to you. So marketing has indeed become one-to-one.
And the more you use those coupons, Phil Lempert, the more they send them? I mean, do they?
Well, there's different ways to do it. So Kroger, about 10 years ago, bought half of a company out of the UK called dunnhumby. Dunnhumby, and about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they bought the rest of it. It's now called 84.51. And this is the intelligence that has kept Kroger, just as been described, you know, in tune with consumers. I'm not concerned that Kroger's had two quarters where they're down and so on. Again, very bright people. They're going to figure this out. So, you know, when you look at that 84.51 model, the sky is the limit, and they're just as smart, if not smarter, as Amazon is, and especially as it relates to food products. So, you know, those coupons at the end of the checkout, those are different. Those are Catalina coupons, and basically somebody buys the right to give you a coupon. So let's use soda as an example. So Coca-Cola pays Catalina a fee. So when you buy Coca-Cola, you get a coupon to reward you and keep you as a consumer. Or Coca-Cola could buy, you know, giving you a coupon if you're a Pepsi or another kind of soda consumer. Or, you know, they can buy the right to give you, when you buy Coke, here's a coupon for another one of our products, like, you know, vitamin water. So, again, it's all about this one-to-one personalization. When we have this data about you, now it becomes a very valuable tool for marketers to decide how they want to reach you and what's the best way to reach you. Do they want to reinforce their business? Do they want to attract new consumers? Do they want you to get an add-on from a sister company? You know, Pepsi owns Frito-Lay, so it's really great every time you buy a Pepsi to get a coupon for Lay's, one of the Lay's brands of chips. So a lot of that is again, being able to be fueled by technology today.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us. I appreciate your time. Phil Lempert, grocery retail industry analyst and founder of SupermarketGuru.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Shashi Mata, clinical associate professor of marketing at Ohio State Fisher College of Business. Thanks to you.
Thanks, Ann.
Kyle McKinnon produced this show. Thanks to Kyle McKinnon. Thanks to the Allside staff, producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shia Lynette, the Allside's interns Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Aaron Kinkley, and Owen Doherty, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DiCenzo is a composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, and Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. And you can follow me as well on Twitter at Ann Fisher WOSU. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.